Now, back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
They got good hitters.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, 7 o'clock hour, Sports of the Line, Chris Raby, until 9 o'clock tonight. Cardinals and Cubs postponed, but we are still hanging out. Get us more baseball talk in a moment. Mike Anderson in the house. Stanley Cup playoffs roll on tonight. Outside of the Bruins at TD Garden showing the Yankees-Red Sox fight with Joe Kelly throwing haymakers and then putting Kelly on the video board because he was at the game over the weekend, the crowd going crazy. What stood out? What did you catch over the weekend? Has your opinion changed? Who you're rooting for? How about the Capitals, man? I guess they got to win one in Columbus to get back to D.C., huh?
Yeah, they do. And, tough sledding for them because Columbus is a really strong team. They've proved it all year, especially since the trade deadline, and they really patched up a few holes. But, both overtime losses, both had the lead in both games. So, I mean, mentally, that's just a lot to overcome. You got to be kicking yourself looking back at the opportunities you had. And plus, they got the goaltender situation going on where who are they going to start next game, Philip Grubauer or Braden Holtby. So, a lot going on in Washington. And you always got to think about the past there, too. So, just a lot of pressure for them. And like I said, Columbus is a solid team. So,
how about Vegas? Was that Friday night? The two overtime winner?
Yeah, I would say that was the biggest, most fun takeaway of the whole weekend. Not only that, but then backing it up on the road last night in Los Angeles with Jonathan Quick still standing on his head, going into the third period down a goal and scoring three third period goals against a strong defensive team that had Drew Doughty back. Just unbelievable. Just relentless pressure. They're still able to play with the speed that you've seen all season from them. Against a team that you really thought maybe would have the best chance of shutting down their speed because of the physicality and size of the Kings. But Vegas is still just relentless. And, going into the playoffs, a lot of people probably doubted them yet again. It's the playoffs. It's a new element. Yeah. Can we expect the same thing out of Vegas? And, I mean, thus far they are proving that you can expect them to bring the same kind of speed. And it's going to be tough for the Kings to fight back. So, just an outstanding performance so far by the Golden Knights.
They put on a heck of a pregame presentation at home, too.
Yeah, how about that?
Unreal. It's like a Vegas show before the game.
Yeah, yeah. They got the Blue Man Group, the drummers, Logic performing, and the whole place just going nuts.
They do like a night beating the hell out of a king at center ice.
Right, right. The crowd's definitely been riled up there. I mean, even in the overtime... Well, I mean, obviously in the overtime, I guess, but they would zoom out and show the whole place, and man, that place was going nuts. One of the most hostile environments I've ever seen at a hockey game. So good on them, especially being first-year fans and this into it already. Very impressive.
They also tweeted out from their team account, like in between the first and second overtimes on Friday, that anywhere else in the NHL you wouldn't be able to buy beer in the arena, but they had like certain areas in the building where you could still buy alcohol.
Right, which is part of the reason why I was real glad that they won, because that many highly intoxicated people that late in the night following a loss would have been dangerous.
All right, that's Mike Anderson as we kick off hour number two of the program. Tom Ackerman's going to talk some Cardinals and more. When we come back, we'll talk about the Cincinnati series. We'll talk about the lineup moving forward, especially with the activation of Jed Jerko. We'll cover it all with Tom and the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line after this on KMOX.
This is the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
You are the best baseball town in America, and there is no doubt about it.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Norris is ready from the stretch. The pitch on the way, a swing and a line drive left field. Bader makes the catch for a Redbird winner. Harrison Bader runs it down. And the Cardinals have swept the Reds 4 games in Cincinnati, winning today 3-2.
Tom Ackerman joins us. No baseball tonight. Cardinals and Cubs postponed. So we're hanging out on the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line. And Tom, unfortunately, forecast doesn't look great for Chicago for the next couple of days. So this could be, this could maybe be something that we see over the next day or two, the postponement, unfortunately, because of the brutal weather up there.
Yeah, you know, I told our executive producer, Ben Boyd, this morning that I did not think that they would postpone it. I was wrong. They definitely, that with the temperatures remaining cold and all that snow they got this morning, yeah, it just stayed. You know, it's just the smart move. I mean, it's just going to be awful playing conditions. And like you said, it could be for the next couple of days. You know, I think they made a mistake by starting the schedule so early. I mean, we just had way too many of these. All that means now is that you're going to have more makeup dates later. I just think that it got baseball off to a bad start. You're seeing it reflected in the seats in some of these games too. And I don't know. I'm longing for the warm weather. This is also an unusually cold April in St. Louis, yeah, although it turned out to be not a bad day today, around 50 and sunny. But I'm just ready for this warm weather. If I know St. Louis, it's going to go from like 40s and 50s to 80s in a heartbeat. But in Chicago, this time of year, what an awful set of conditions they were handed this week.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Passan wrote about this today, that even in markets that recently have seemed to be immune to attendance issues, when it's outside of maybe performance-based, like the Cardinals and Cubs, they're dealing with that. And I understand that, you know, you can't just put early games in warm weather cities and domes, because those teams don't want a month of April games when kids are still in school. They want, you know, an equal balance of games like everyone else. But I've talked about now for like the last year, and I saw people tweeting about this today, like, if you could somehow bake in like a doubleheader or two each month when the weather's nice, May, June, July, August, September, there's like one a month, maybe two a month on Saturdays, maybe one a month. If you can get the Players Association to go along with it, maybe you give them an extra day at the end of the All-Star break, then that's like 5 or 6 days that you can just save. And you can bank that week for the start of the season or for the end of the season, so that you're starting the playoffs earlier.
No, I agree.
I would do it on Saturdays out of a 4-game series, Friday, Saturday, Saturday, Sunday. So it wouldn't affect the getaway day.
Yeah. No, I like it. You know, I like it. I think that, in a lot of ways, as much as we have our radio network as strong as it is, a lot of this is dictated by television and the money that's wrapped into TV, and kind of, you know, they sort of lay everything out based on money. And I don't know what the answer is. I just think they cranked this thing up too early. I kind of like what you're saying there. And I just for the good of the game, we've got to find a way to make this more appealing. And you can't start the season, you can't roll out your product and have it just be played in the snow or played, yeah, too early. Or, you know, you got to get people involved. You got to get the casuals. There's a lot of competition right now, and baseball is going to get lost in the dust or in the snow with the NBA and NHL playoffs going on and the NFL draft. There's a lot of things to pay attention to, golf, et cetera. So I'm with you. The other thing is, you know, we've got to figure out, once the playoffs do start, how to stop having games at like 9 o'clock at night,
yeah,
you know, so the kids can actually stay up and watch the game too. And it's okay to have a few more day games if that is the scenario. But we'll get to that when we get to that.
Tom Ackerman with us. No baseball tonight. Cardinals and Cubs scheduled for tomorrow and Wednesday. And assuming that they play baseball, I know that it's super early, but these are huge games. You just look at the records for the Cardinals against teams in the division over the past few years, and they've struggled. You look at, you know, what they did against the Cincinnati Reds over the last few years, missing the playoffs by a game in 2016, by a handful of games last year. And if you had taken care of business against the Reds rather than going 20-18 over 2 years versus them, you're in good shape. We'll get to the Cubs in a moment, but regardless of how bad the Reds are, the Cubs split a pair of games with them a week ago.
That's right.
Nice to handle your business over there.
Yeah, they're absolutely. I mean, look, you took four out of four. I don't care who it is. It's a major league team, and you take all four games of a series. That's handling your business. So I thought the Cardinals played pretty well. And the only time, really, that it was shaky was the fact that there were a couple times that the offense, you know, this season hasn't fired. That was fine. I thought the starting pitching was good. The only time that it was shaky was yesterday, at the end of the game, where Bud Norris gives up the home run, and before that, Tyler Lyons gave up a home run. Now, a lot of fly balls go out of that park, but you know the Cardinals still aren't totally sure how to close a game from a bullpen standpoint. But other than that, I mean, they took care of business against a team that is far inferior to them, but they still did it. And like you said, the Cubs had their struggles against that Reds team, who is only, you know, they've only won two games. They're going to struggle to win 50 or 60 games this year, I think. I mean, I think that team is due for 100 losses. The way that based on what I've seen so far, Joey Votto is, to me, a top five player in the game. And when he's playing, they're great, but they're still going to struggle. All of these games count. And I know we're going to talk about the Cubs specifically here in a minute, but all of these games count just as much as they do in September. And I think that maybe there's even more importance right now if they get this series going against the Cubs from an emotional standpoint and a confidence standpoint. The Cardinals need to play well at Wrigley. I think for everybody's psyche, they are a better team going into Wrigley than they were a year ago. They have more star power in Marcell Ozuna than they did a year ago. And I think it's important for them to get off to a good start. I think going into Wrigley, and now you're losing a game here, but going in and losing the next two there would not be good for them. And even though it's April, you could sit there and shake it off and say it's early in the season, but I think you've got to go in there and do damage and at least win one of them.
Cardinals were 56-35 last year against teams that were under 500. So certainly an opportunity to improve that and, you know, improve where you end up at the end of the year. As far as the Cubs go, like, they played them tight, it seems like, but last year they were 5-14 against the Cubs. You miss the postseason by three or four games, you win the division if you turn that around, if you flip that over. And a lot of them were close games. Craig Edwards from Fangraphs points out 5-14 against the Cubs, 2-7 in one-run games against the Cubs. If they had reversed the one-run record and gone 10-9 versus them last year, they would have won the division, just if you had won those coin flip games.
Yeah, yeah. But you've got to win at Wrigley Field, and you have to be better against the Cubs. The Cardinals were, and I felt pretty good, actually, about tonight if they had played the game. Adam Wainwright's always been good at Wrigley, and I thought that he started to turn the corner a little bit, and I thought maybe he could keep them in the game. But, you know, they were, Chris, in the Cubs World Championship year, the Cardinals were 6-3 at Wrigley that season.
Yeah.
They played really well there. And I think they've played really well against the Cubs historically at Busch Stadium. But last year, it was a huge disparity, and I thought that was a real problem for the Cardinals from a mental standpoint. They just couldn't get over the fact that they were now in a different class than the Cubs. So they have to reestablish themselves in the division, that this is going to be probably a three-team race between the Cubs, Brewers, and Cardinals, and the Cardinals need to handle their business as such. I think that the Cardinals' rotation is not as good as the Cubs on paper, but I think they have an opportunity to be really good if Luke Weaver continues to be the pitcher we think he's going to be. Carlos Martinez looks fantastic. I mean, just ridiculously good. And then the other three, you know, can they get it done? Can Michael Wacha, Adam Wainwright, and Miles Michaelis hold off Jack Flaherty from having to join this rotation? And, you know, where do we go from there? I think this Cardinals team will succeed if their rotation is good. I think we've pretty much established the fact that this team has some firepower offensively, and we can argue about who goes where in the lineup. I think this bullpen still needs to be sorted out, but yeah. I think they have enough arms to be really good. It's the rotation that'll be the key.
All right, that's Tom Ackerman. Quick break. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about the bullpen and about Greg Holland.
Then we'll get into the lineup. A couple of guys activated today, the Cardinals and Luke Gregerson and Jed Jerko. That's next. It's the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line. Cardinals and Cubs postponed due to the weather in Chicago. So we're hanging out until 9 o'clock, and we're back after this. And you're home for Cardinals baseball, KMOX.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
You shot side like a I've got to find some better weeds. 4 or 5 meters running around the bend when the government may just surround you again. If dying young won't change your mind, baby, 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 ride on down. Out of control, but you're playing a role. You think you can go to the 18th hole? Where you flip out the day of the championship. Try to go it alone or you won't forfeit.
All right, it's Sports Open Line. Chris Raby with you until 9 o'clock. No Cardinals baseball tonight. Their game with the Cubs postponed, so we're hanging out with Tom Ackerman. I want to get to the lineup in a moment and the Gregerson and Jerko moves, what that does. But we were just talking about the bullpen. I was actually encouraged by Mike Matheny on Friday night after Bud Norris got the save situation, and he got it again yesterday, saying, listen, we have to realize that maybe we I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, maybe we moved Greg Holland along a little bit quickly and essentially made an assumption about where he would be. The guy threw twice in Palm Beach. He's now thrown three times here, including that disastrous first save opportunity at Busch. He looked great on Saturday in the eighth inning before Jordan Hicks shut it down. And, you know, that's kind of refreshing to say, like, this is a different circumstance. You know, this guy had been throwing, but who knows who he was throwing to. And it's essentially like his spring training right now. So I like that kind of open-mindedness. And when we talked during spring before they had Greg Holland about all the options they had in the bullpen, they're truly showing that right now, mixing and matching. They've done it without Gregerson. Norris has got some opportunities. Obviously, Jordan Hicks has been in some really high-leverage situations. And I like the willingness to deal with that and figure things out until Holland is ready to go.
I do feel like, in a way, Gregerson's sort of been a forgotten man here because of the success of Jordan Hicks and the rest of this bullpen and all the hype around Greg Holland, that Luke Gregerson was anointed the closer to start the winter warm-up. And while some people scoffed at that, he does have the ability to be a really good setup guy and potentially gain some saves here. So the Cardinals do have some options, and you're absolutely right about Matheny and about Greg Holland. I mean, we can gripe about Matheny's in-game decisions and some of his pitching management, bullpen management, but the bottom line is he has a job of managing this team and making decisions that are for the betterment of the franchise. And sometimes you just have to say, look, this guy's not ready. And, you know, it's partly the blame. I don't know who exactly points the finger at, but the entire free agent process, whether it's Holland's side or the Cardinals' side, the Cardinals knew they had a need there. They signed him on opening day. I mean, it's like, you know, or they announced it on opening day. So it really was not fair in retrospect to think that Greg Holland would just be ready to come out dealing. I mean, like you said, that is going to take a while. I don't care who you are. There is a process, and you've got to be able to go through the proper training to get to this point. That's why they do six-plus weeks of spring training games. So,
yeah, look at Carlos's rough spring.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know,
he wasn't even pitching in games. He was in the backfields.
No, I mean, and you were down there. I mean, I would rank the Cardinals starting pitchers, if I were to rank them 1 through 6, including Jack Flaherty, I would put Martinez fifth. Based on what I saw in spring training, Weaver was the best. I thought Flaherty was the second best. I think Waka and Wainwright probably tied.
Yep.
And then Martinez, and then Michaelis, who actually finished really strong. Yeah. But Carlos had some problems, and you know, you've got to be able to iron those out and get yourself rolling. Man, is he rolling right now. I think Greg Holland is going to be fine. He has the stuff to get it done. It was just that was a tough situation. Get in there, debut, 10th inning, 4-4 game, and against a team that can flat-out hit, and he's walking people left and right, and it was just it just sort of snowballed on him. I'd like to see the Cardinals closer work his way back into this, and he will. And in the meantime, you have some options.
A couple more minutes with Tom Ackerman. With Jed Jerko being activated, who is your best starting eight? I won't even say that because the outfield is going to remain the way it is. Who is your best starting infield? You can't take Jose Martinez out of the lineup because all he's doing is, right at the top of the National League in terms of batting average, and all that dude does is mash and get on base. You're not going to take Paul DeJong out. That leaves Carpenter, Jerko, and Wong. I know that maybe Jerko won't be pushed right away, and potentially you'd want to use him as a utility guy, but could you see all three of those guys mixing and matching, or do you see Carpenter playing every day? How do you think this starts to play out?
I see some mixing and matching. I do. I see a little bit. I think that Matt Carpenter doesn't have to play every day. I think that he can be spelled once in a while, but I think he has to play most of them. I think that Jed can play against lefties, and I think Jose has to play every day. Jose is barreling everything. I mean, I think you and I have been in agreement from watching him from the beginning that this guy is on a pace to be an all-star. I mean, you just look at the categories right now in the National League. He's on top in RBIs. He's on top in average. He is killing it right now, and he's probably sliding into a position where he could be your number three hitter, and you don't have to worry. Or, he could bat just about anywhere in an RBI production, a little lower, or he could be a three, and you could be okay there. To answer your question, my starting infield, I still have to have Wong at second base, I think. So I would have Martinez at first, Wong at second. DeJong, even though he's striking out a lot, is my shortstop. And then at third base, my best bet right now because of his bat is Carpenter. But I'd be okay with Jerko playing there. And if I had to, I would put him in there against lefties and kind of roll with it from there and just mix and match. I'd be totally cool with that. And then in the outfield, you have your great three outfielders and Harrison Bader. So I'm okay with the Cardinals' options right now. They just need to find the right mix now that Jed is back.
Jed Jerko has been good defensively for the Cardinals. He's been an above-average defensive infielder with most of that coming at third base. Last year he was really good. That's the one area that the Cardinals have really struggled, right? Like infield defense, and especially if you dive into some of the advanced numbers on ground balls in the infield or, ground balls in general, I guess, that are turned into outs, they don't fare very favorably. So if you can get a jolt at third base defensively, what are you sacrificing by putting Carpenter at second defensively versus Wong? And what are the offensive implications as well?
Interesting. I think, and by the way, Jed Jerko was the starting second baseman on opening day last year with John Lester starting that game. Actually, Jerko got the start at second base over Wong, so he can play there too. And I do think, Wong is a better defensive second baseman than Matt is and better than Jerko is, but I don't know that you as much as Matt Carpenter can be a liability sometimes defensively, I just think his bat really plays, and I think overall I'm pretty happy with him in the lineup. I would like to see him turn the corner offensively and maybe be that all-star bat, maybe a little more aggressive early in the count. All these kinds of things, just see him change it up a little bit. I really like what he does, and I feel comfortable when he's in the lineup. I don't know that he has to be your number three hitter, and I don't know anymore that he needs to be the leadoff hitter. I think Fowler's fine there. I wouldn't even mind seeing Tommy Pham at leadoff every once in a while. I think it's okay to just see what they can figure out with the right mix of players here. But the Cardinals are in a good position. I mean, Matt is... The good thing about Matt Carpenter, as much as people like to hound him for his defense, is that he can play those three positions for you and be a bat in the lineup. And he's one of the smartest on-base guys that you have, maybe the best. So there's nothing wrong with him. It's just trying to figure out the right place for him.
Hey, before we let you go, Mark Smith is headed to Mizzou, another gut punch for Illinois.
Konzo Martin keeps just racking him up and knocking him down. Courtney Ramey, apparently, and I admittedly don't know anything or really follow recruiting. I just wait to see what happens. But Courtney Ramey is apparently hosting Texas, Mizzou, and Louisville over the next 3 days. Wow, even on the heels of Michael Porter Jr., I think two things, Tom. One, Konzo continues to have it rolling. And two, regardless of how many minutes he ever played in a Mizzou uniform, for this year, the next 5 years, truly, I think as long as Konzo Martin is at Mizzou, the impact that Porter Jr. made on the court will be minuscule to his impact on that program as a whole and how it's going to allow Konzo and his staff to operate moving forward.
Huge branding for Missouri to have Michael Porter Jr. in that program, and Jonte, for that matter, really helps Mizzou get back on the map and make people understand that if those guys were in, that something is right. Now, for Mark Smith, he goes way back with Mizzou and actually back with Konzo Martin as well, so there was some familiarity there. Well, about Courtney Ramey, I found that interesting in that Louisville, I think just yesterday, said that they weren't recruiting him, or at least that was the connection of the Louisville, now that they had hired Chris Mack and they were kind of going in another direction. Now they appear to be back on the table there. And then Texas and Missouri, like you said, I think there's room for Courtney Ramey if he wants to jump on board. Whatever he ends up finally deciding is fine with me. He's a talented guy. It'd be great to see him a Tiger. That said, I mean, Mark Smith has a lot of talent. For whatever reason, it didn't fit, whether he was uncomfortable or didn't like the offense. At Illinois. It's interesting. In the beginning of the year, I was hearing over at Illinois that they loved the first name that came out of their mouths over there was Mark Smith. So they loved him, that he reminded Brad Underwood of Jason Kidd, that he could do a lot of things because he could run the point and be a shooting guard. But for whatever reason, the offense didn't work for him. He wasn't shooting the ball well from the outside. I think he hit it about 27% from three. This is a really nice pickup for Mizzou. I think he'll be very comfortable, and Mizzou could use as many ball handlers as they can get. He's going to be a really good player for the Tigers. This is a great pickup, and like you said, Konzo Martin, I mean, who wouldn't want to go to battle for him? I think that he's just the right fit for this program. I also feel like it's just the beginning of what he can do. He won 20 games without Michael Porter Jr. If Jonte ends up following through and going to the NBA, you now have the post-Porter movement going forward, so you can continue to kind of go with it, you know, you can plan for the future with a number of different players and not have to worry about the constant questions about is Michael going to play? Is Michael going to the NBA? Is Michael staying? Is Jonte staying? I mean, I love those guys, but there's something to be said for the rest of the team and the rest of the program moving forward. I think Missouri is going to be really good for a long time as long as Konzo is around, and I can't see him going anywhere else right now. So I think Mizzou basketball is set up for a nice run here.
Tom Ackerman hanging out with us as the Cardinals and Cubs were postponed at Wrigley. Hoping for baseball tomorrow with Adam Wainwright on the mound and then Wednesday afternoon with Luke Weaver on the mound. Hey, appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Way to put together the show here after after a postponement.
Big time Ben Boyd moves. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
That's what we do. Thanks, buddy.
That's Tom Ackerman talking Cardinals and more with us on Sports Open Line. I think back to, you know, talking about Jerko in the lineup and the question that I asked Derek as well, like, what is net-net the best trio? I guess Jose Martinez at first base is where he's going to be because you can't take him out of the lineup and he can't play anywhere else. But then is it Jerko at third, Carpenter at second? Is it Carpenter at third, Wong at second? Or is it Jerko / Carpenter at third, Carpenter / Wong at second? I think, like, defensively especially, since that's where you've had some issues, is infield defense. I think you need to see a bunch of Jed Jerko over there. I have also long been a proponent of playing Colton Wong every day because in the past, when he's played every day, he's played well. And I know that it hasn't been the start to the season that maybe we expected from Colton Wong. He has not been very good. He's hitting 150. He's got one hit in the last week. So maybe that's not the answer. But I really think his glove plays. Maybe it's Jerko and then Carpenter at second. Real quick, what's up, Big Al?
Hey.
What's up, brother?
Great broadcasting, my man.
Thanks, brother.
You
what's up?
You did a good job. I mean that.
Appreciate
and
it, man.
I heard your history with Tommy, and I didn't know, but we had to sit down and break bread, and I'll tell you about my stories at Lindenwood from 78 to 82, interviewing O.J. Simpson, Bobby Hall, and when the Big Red were playing 49ers, and Winnipeg came in 79 with Bobby, and I had to press pass for a while, but didn't know your history, and now I do, and I love you, bud, even more.
Thank you, man. Tom did a nice job with that. It was fun to do.
And Ackerman, pick up your underwear. Angie's tired of it.
Thank you, Al.
See you, bud.
Big Al. I did a profile with Tom Ackerman where kind of talked a little about my background and how I got to St. Louis. It was fun. Sure, you can find it on the website, right, Mike? KMOX.com/profiles. KMOX podcasts. KMOX.com on demand. Chris Raby profile. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to hear from Jackie Robinson in the 8 o'clock hour. Really amazing stuff. A couple more Cardinals and also some Blues stuff. It is at Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line until 9 o'clock on KMOX.
Get ready for the Cards and Cubs tomorrow night. Ameren Total Access 610. First pitch 7:05. Hear it here on your home for the best Cardinals coverage. KMOX.
For the championship.
The Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line continues.
Little dipsy-doo, jabberoo.
On KMOX.
All right, wrapping up the 7 o'clock hour, let's talk to Steve before the news. Steve, what's going on, man?
Hey, I love your show. Don't mean to hit you with a potpourri, but a question popped in my head while I was on hold. But real excited about the Cardinals. I like their young pitching for years to come, and I'm glad they didn't give up a whole lot this year with a lot of their young talent. So the Blues, real quick, and then I want to get to Mizzou. I'm 52 years old and had season tickets forever. This team is real franchise. It's really, quite honestly, kind of disgusting. I mean, we've got Nashville, you know, went to a cup last year. You got Vegas in the running for a cup, are going to a cup at least. We've never even really gone to the cup. That whole thing with the gimmick thing that happened in the 60s, this team has never even really legitimately made it to the Stanley Cup. I think it's disgusting. Regarding Mizzou, Edwards, I assume Mark, he's got to sit next year. Am I correct in thinking that?
Mark Smith, yeah. So he'll be eligible the year after. Yep.
Okay. I like our guard play with what he's got coming in. I like the kids he's bringing in. My hope is that if Jonte does leave, that Konzo considers going JUCO for you know, a 6'8" type kid. Because I think I agree with you. He's going to recruit well for years to come.
Yeah.
So I think we're in a good place. But I think that there's some talent down there that if they don't add a piece with Jonte leaving, that they're kind of wasting a Tillman and some of these other guys that are really talented. But real quick comments on that, if you don't mind, and then also on the Blues. I think it's really nauseating that this franchise is just so inept, and they seem now that they almost need to go into a rebuilding phase. If I get your comments, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. The Blues stuff is brutal. I've said that I think probably the most like tortured fan base in sports, considering what they haven't done. And they're different than like the Cubs or the Browns or the Bills, because when those fan bases were not winning championships, they were really bad. And I know you can say, duh, but the Blues sometimes were like the best team in the league in the 90s and 2000s. And then not getting to the cup. I do think, though, and this isn't just rights holder, whatever. I do think, though, that this current ownership group is committed. You've seen the money that they've spent. I think that Doug Armstrong probably understood a year or two ago where this club needed to go, the direction it needed to go. And I think you'll start to see that direction with some of the young prospects in the next couple of years. The Thomases, the Kyrus, Tage Thompson, Fabry coming back. Those are the kinds of guys that I think will start to play the style of Nashville, start to play the style of Vegas, and play the style of the new NHL. I got about 10 seconds, but the Mizzou stuff, I know they're involved in JUCO guys. They're going to continue to be involved in JUCO guys. They struck gold with Cassius Robertson last year, and that would be a perfect bridge to some of these guys that are going to come in the next couple of years. Steve, thanks for the call. Back in a moment after the news.